your host for Lacrosse Talk PM, Rick Sola.
All right, welcome to a Thursday of Lacrosse Talk PM. I am back. You're not, your radios are not broken right now. That is, there's just the cicadas have, what do you call it, Ted? What do you call it when they come? Is there a
emerge?
Emerge, just emerged. Okay.
Yeah.
They've emerged from the studio. They're leaking in. No, really. So Ted Wilson is an entomologist at Viterbo University. Entomologist, the study of insects.
That's right.
And this is what we're going to be hearing in a couple of weeks, maybe?
Yeah, not necessarily in lacrosse, but in the Midwest, that's going to be a really prominent sound for a lot of people around us.
And when you say prominent, you mean like super annoying and it's going to drive us insane?
It could. It very well could, especially when you're thinking about billions or trillions of these all singing the same song.
So these,
I find it fascinating.
This is the sound of the 17-year cicada. I don't, Linnaeus. I don't even know what that. Linnaeus.
Linnaeus.
Brood something something. Brood 12 or something like that, right?
19 and 13.
19 and 13. I was way off. Well, not way off, but okay. So people have probably heard about this hype, and we've heard we have cicadas here, right?
Like, yeah.
This isn't anything weird.
Nope. No.
I'm going to turn the cicadas off because I think we'll get enough of cicadas. Maybe I'll turn them on when we. But we're going to talk about cicadas today a little bit. So, and we won't. We're just going to kind of like go overview the show a little bit first. Is everything called a brood when you call it, or is
there's species and broods of those species?
Okay, so two species of cicadas are going to emerge for the first time in over 200 years, right?
221. Okay.
And we could talk about how their alarm clocks work in 17 and 13-year increments in a little bit. But lacrosse won't be bemoaned about this. And we talked about this because we know this. You predicted this like 3 to maybe 4 years ago or 2 years ago because you've been on the show a couple of times.
Yeah.
This was a thing that you just brought up one day. And I was like, what are you talking about? Every 17 years? And you said in 2024, this mess is going to come. So it wasn't something that we didn't know about, but it seems pretty crazy that these insects live underground for 17 to 13 years and then just know, hey, we're going to come up. So I gotta pick your brain on how they do that. And it hasn't happened in 221 years where these two things. I want to make like a Wisconsin abortion ban joke there. But actually, the cicadas have taken longer than the law was made. All right. So other things, I've already found some ticks.
Ticks.
So we have you think the tick season is early this year? Like.
Yep. Yeah. If you look at Extension, UWS Extension, they've been monitoring this, and we've had some warm days here recently, and that has been enough to jumpstart the tick cycle. So if you have ticks. It's not a surprise.
All right.
Be prepared.
So we'll talk about that. No mow May is coming and here. And I mean, you shouldn't be mowing anyway, but if you want to be part of No Mow May, we're going to talk about No Mow May. And the City of Lacrosse has started this initiative about, this would be the third year of this,
right.
I believe. And it's just the idea, the easiest of ideas, the greatest thing that any kid could ever want is don't mow your lawn until after May, right? Till June 1st. I don't know why anyone would not want to do that. And maybe we could talk about maybe the good and bad about that.
Sure.
But that's another initiative the City of Lacrosse is going to do. And then Ted had some invasive species that are being monitored in the area. These are the ones, huh? Spotted lanternfly and spongy moth. These would be better to have pictures of, and it's hard to do. I could show a camera, like pull a picture up on the. I could actually pull the computer up. And then I had some like doom and gloom. Everything I think I sent you was a little doom and gloom. And we've talked about this before, the great like apocalypse of bugs, right? When you're driving and you don't see bugs smashing your windshield. Or when you're out in the woods and you don't hear anything, that's not a great sign. If you're not slapping mosquitoes, that's also not a great sign. The other story I had was this, the idea that scientists have figured out that a bumblebee or a queen bee can survive underwater for a week.
Yeah, bumblebee. Yeah, that's new research came out this week.
What other kind of experiments do you guys get to do that other people don't get to do? You know what we should do? We should drown this thing and see how long it lasts. Oh, how long can a cow survive underwater? Let's drown it and see. All right, 608-785-7914 is the talk and text line. I think that I had other ones. There's a cicadas fungus that turns cicadas into zombies. I feel like they're already kind of zombies. I had that one, and Ted had no idea what I was talking about when I sent him that story that I found. But anyway, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the great cicada bloom. We call it a bloom. It's springtime. They're blooming. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in a minute. All right, welcome back to Lacrosse Talk PM. 608-785-7914 is the talk and text line. If you got a question for entomologist Ted Wilson, the study of bugs, that's what he does. He is the biology chair at Viterbo. He's been there for a decade. Okay, first of all,
yeah.
I mean, we've probably done this, but I kind of forgot, and it's been a while. Like, as a kid, are you the weird, I'm into, I don't know, magnifying glassing ants or collecting bugs? Or, like, how do you... It had to have started as a kid, right? Like, because you don't grow up into an adult and then start. Well, maybe. I guess maybe. Because I'm kind of into bugs now, and I don't know if I was obsessed with them, but I don't know if I wanted it to be a career.
I was a bug kid for sure. I was collecting woolly bears, worms, snakes, all the things. In my case, I kind of grew into it, of course, but I was not afraid of them growing up and collecting them.
So, how did your parents take that? Like.
Oh well, I mean, I'm a Gen Xer. I was outside all the time anyway, so I was always bringing stuff home and getting my hands dirty and all the fun stuff that we did as a kid, drinking out of the hose. Yes,
that's all fine. Being an outside kid, drinking out of the hose, not coming back till the sun comes down. But when you bring, you know, a giant spider into the house or something of that ilk.
Oh yeah!
Your parents have to be like, "Oh God!"
No, they didn't make it into the house usually, but we had a garage and I had a yard, and
they set the boundaries at the boundaries.
I had a big jar that I put my mom's pantyhose over, and then kept them in there so give them a little air. Or you punch holes in the pickle jar lid and grow out of a butterfly. Yeah. Did all those things.
Do you have like a favorite? This is the coolest bug or my favorite bug or
I have favorite insects in groups. So I have like a favorite beetle. I love click beetles and rove beetles. The butterfly, the monarch's really hard to beat. The monarch, assassin bugs are some of my favorite true bugs. They're in a group called the Hemipterans. Assassin bugs. They got a cool name, right?
Right.
Regidiidae is their family name.
What's cool about them?
Well, they eat other little bugs, and they're kind of like these ambush, and they have these daggers for a mouth, so they kind of have this whole assassin thing going on. So that makes them.
You know, are they around here?
Oh yeah.
Oh, they are.
Oh yeah, and they're not attacking people; they're attacking other bugs and things like that, of course.
What kind of bugs would people have to be afraid of? Like literally, like, oh, I need to avoid this.
Oh well, you know, you don't want to be bitten by things, so you know, you got to be careful of the wasps outside your house. They're not insects, but ticks and some spiders can bite. But so those are ones. We're actually pretty lucky here in Wisconsin. There's not a lot that wants to eat us, other than maybe the occasional outbreak of biting flies and mosquitoes, bees.
I had a conversation with a friend in. They live in Australia, so the conversation, like, Australia has crazy, like, insect spiders. Just
huntsman spiders.
And the argument was that, you know, you got to be afraid of these things. And I'm like, these things are afraid of us. And if you provoke them, they will, you know, then they will attack you or defend themselves, so to speak. Is there any bug out there that isn't afraid of us and would... human, good. I will eat you, so to speak.
Well,
a tick would come to mind as you mentioned it. That's because
parasitics,
right? But is there anything else that, like, everything in nature is kind of afraid of us and only is defending itself, right? Except maybe, I don't know, like a lion or something. That's
in the entomology world, you're absolutely right. The things that are going to come for us are viewing us as some sort of resource. So they want either a blood meal or they want to live in our house. It's when that type of an invasion, So from their perspective, we're just part of the food chain in that case. But there isn't anything that out of maliciousness is going to come after us.
Right.
For sure.
Like mosquitoes, obviously, and ticks are just trying to survive, not afraid of us in a way, but they're not, we're going to take these suckers out. All right. So I think the cicadas talk, is that going to be a bigger conversation than the tick talk and everything else?
I think I don't know.
We could probably get the cicadas conversation out of the way before 5:30.
Sure.
So this isn't going to happen in La Crosse at all, or we're just going to kind of hear, or will we just hear it from the county south of us because they'll be so loud when a billion to a trillion, what did you tell me, how many per tree?
Yeah, there's estimates of maybe 40,000 cicadas per tree in some areas, and this is going to be the range of the of this particular insect. They're called the 17.
We have to wait. We have to turn the cicadas on while we have cicada talk. We just have to have them in the background. This is the brood 13, brood 13. That's the 17-year one.
Yes.
So these guys come out every 17 years, and then we have a 13-year one coming out at the same time.
Yeah.
But not necessarily in La Crosse County.
That's right. That's right. So they are going to be in Wisconsin, but in the southern few tiers of the state is going to be the 17-year cicada coming out, and so it's been underground for 17 years, eating on tree roots. And kind of doing their underground bug thing, drinking sap, really not really bugging anybody. And then there's another group called the 13-year cicada, which has also been underground, but except for 13 years. And it's a really great example of evolutionary speciation where this is 13 and 17 are prime numbers, and so they do not divide into each other at all. And so by that temporal isolation, they do not overlap as adults where they would be breeding. And so this is a really great way for them not to mix as adults. And so every 21 years, they actually do overlap. So I think I did the math on that. It was 1803. The last time these species of insects have seen each other above ground.
Okay, 1803, the last time they have here, or they only exist here, therefore, or in some other section. Because, we did the eclipse, right? Like, we won't see an eclipse again. Well, you can go see the eclipse again if you go somewhere else on Earth.
Sure.
So will these two species collide somewhere else, or do they only kind of exist here?
They only exist here. These two broods do. So, if you pull up a map, they only live there.
So we've literally, nobody alive has ever, maybe some tortoises out there have experienced. I don't even know if a tortoise lives 221 years. So nobody alive has ever, we've never experienced this.
Where these two broods have come out at the same time. That's right.
But you already kind of know what's going to happen? Could something crazy happen? I brought this up. So UW La Crosse entomologist Barrett Klein, he came on my show a couple weeks ago, but we didn't talk about this, but I did text him this, and I should have texted you too. But I asked him if the cicadas come out, these two different species, would they have sex with each other and create a whole new cicada species that would come out every, 15 years, 13 to 17. And he gave me an answer like, they wouldn't, I don't think that I'm doing this smash on the camera. But that he was like, no, not really.
Yeah, that's probably a really good guess. There are entomologists specifically going to the areas where they are overlapping. East Central Illinois, I think a little chunk down in Iowa has where both broods are actually overlapping. And they want to see, lots of different things, obviously how the environment is impacted and these rather unique situations, but maybe what is there a species interaction going on?
So Barrett's text back to me, he said, they might try to smash these two species, but as separate species, they won't produce viable offspring. So, but, like you guys are nerds, right? Like you're going to try to see if this happens. Mm-hmm. Is there a way to study these two species together in a way that can you, I don't know, if they don't come out at the same time, they've never come out in 221 years, can you manufacture them to come out and or can you only experience these things every 17 and 13 years?
I am not aware of anybody studying these by any type of inducing the emerging early or later or anything along those lines. Just one of those. There's so many areas of nature where there are interesting questions, but nobody has the time or maybe the creativity at the moment or there's interest to look at these things. But it wouldn't surprise me if somebody starts to look at 17-year and 13-year cicadas because maybe, how can an insect, a six little-legged critter, live for so long just by eating tree sap? Maybe there's some interesting physiology going on that somebody might look into.
Yeah, just when, and I'll bring up the eclipse again. There was some, how do animals react to an eclipse? And then it was, the, you know, reading in, into it, it was scientists haven't really studied this all that much. They're just starting to do that. This thing is, hasn't happened ever for any of these scientists. Is it like all entomologists on deck? We have to do the, all the things. Here's a bullet list of 10 million things we need to study. So that, you know, the next, I guess, has anyone figured out when it'll happen next? Is it every 221 years or is it when these two, is it just the 221 year cycle? When
the 13 will come out every 13 and the 17 will come out every 17. And in my opinion, it's always worth a drive to go check out those events just on themselves.
For you don't know when the next run is though?
Well, what's the math on that? 2,245? 2245 would be the next time.
Oh, okay.
They would actually overlap.
Okay, so not that far. Yeah. So, yeah, so that's what I'm saying. Like, you have to study all these things and then you know, save that for people who will, two generations from, or however many generations.
Two, three generations later.
So that they could study all the things. And I don't even know if it's even worth, like, what would you care about two of these things coming out? But they probably never met each other before, and be like, or they haven't. Well, these ones haven't. Gosh, so you know, like, will they be mad at each other? Or?
But as entomologists, you know, people travel all over the world to come see the eclipse. Well, there's going to be entomologists going to these very specific areas to see two broods out at once because this is really, really, literally a once in a lifetime experience. And I am planning to do that myself.
608-785-7914 is the talk and text line. Dr. Ted Wilson, entomologist and biology chair at Viterbo. Is in studio with us. We got a caller. Caller, who's this?
This is Mark from Winona.
Hey, Mark.
Hey, I got a little twist for you. You ever heard of cicada killers?
Oh yeah.
Because I get them in my lawn all the time. Are those things going to be even worse than what they've been in the past with those? I mean, they're such a nuisance and make such a mess.
They turn up your yard, aren't they?
Yeah, they really do.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Mark. What is a cicada? What is a cicada killer?
Well, that is Wisconsin's largest wasp.
Okay.
So it is what its name says. It actually seeks out cicadas and it will paralyze them. And in Mark's case, if they're in your yard, what they do is they make holes in your yard, big burrows, and they'll bury that cicada, lay an egg or two on it, and that egg will hatch and eat that cicada, and then come out next year as another cicada killer wasp. So they're what we call a parasitoid organism. So they're a parasite that kills their host, and they're a beautiful wasp. I'm obviously biased on that. To answer Mark's question, the answer is no. The reason for that, the wasps are not going to be in greater numbers because they actually focus in on our annual cicada. So that's the one that comes out every year, not until August. So more of a summer species, those big green ones that we've all seen in here and the later in the summer. So it is not doing its cicada killer stuff. The annual cicada or the periodic cicada, the 13 and 17 year cicada are going to be coming out in a few weeks here in June, May and June.
Will those wasps, because they'll come out south of here, south of Winona, will those wasps be like, what is that sound? And then, like, will they migrate south? And
I doubt it. No. I doubt it. I think they're.
What about the wasp down there? Will they be like, oh my God, I'm so. Like, will they breed like a billion extra wasps because they or do they only like the certain kind of cicada?
Well, that's a really good question about just how they, what is the cicada is going to do to the environment or to the other species. It is going to be a boon for a lot of insect eating organisms, mammals, birds. This is going to be a great year for them. You know, they're going to have plenty of food.
Is it going to be a great year? Or are they all going to have like beer bellies, cicada bellies, so to speak?
Yeah, they'll have cicada bellies. They'll be packed full of really nice high protein cicadas.
Do these animals, okay, so if I give my dog 10 pounds of hamburger, my dog will eat 10 pounds of hamburger and puke it up and then just, like, I'm pretty sure, I've never done this, but I'm pretty sure she would just keep eating.
Yeah, yeah.
Will these animals that when, I feel like it'll be an unlimited supply of cicadas.
It's going to be unlimited.
You're talking about 40,000 per tree or something like that.
Yeah.
Will they just eat until, you know, like, you can't overfeed a fish, you can't overfeed a bird. I mean, it's not like we haven't had, you know, 17 years ago, you've probably known this, so,
right.
You know, but.
Right, right. Yeah, no, there's not going to be any short supply of insect food during these areas. But what's interesting about this is it's a really good strategy by the cicadas because nothing can specialize on them because you can't sync up as a predator every 17 years.
Yeah.
And so they're going to, sure, a few of them are going to get eaten, and maybe a little higher percentage than normal, but that's just going to, they're just going to overwhelm everything with just their numbers. And
is
so,
is it like going to grandma's house and getting, you know,
all
whatever,
the cookies.
You know what yeah. I mean? Like this snack that you never, you know, if your grandma lives, you know, states away or something like that, this snack that, will animals be like, I don't know what this is. I'm not going to eat it, or I'm hungry. I'm going to eat whatever.
Yeah. It depends on the animal. Yeah. There's going to be a lot of cicadian eating in general is my prediction. So,
I mean,
yeah.
Okay. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk. Probably the biggest question is like, how do these things know, you know, to come up every 17 years, every 13 years? Yeah. Like, how does that work? It's never 16 or 14 or they're never off. But when we come back, we'll talk about that. And then we'll get into some other things. In the insect world, lacrosse is having no Mo May for the third year. We got to talk about ticks a little bit. I got a text line question about ticks and drowning bees. We could talk about drowning bees for some reason. That's a thing as well. But yeah, stay tuned. This is what you're going to hear in a couple weeks. Welcome back to Lacrosse Talk PM. I'm Rick Solom. In the studio with me is Dr. Ted Wilson. He's an entomologist and a biology chair at Viterbo. Entomology, study of bugs, study of insects, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Spiders don't count?
We study them too, even though they're not insects. Yep.
Spiders get lumped in. They're like, come on, man. But what is it? What's the
arachnologist?
Arachnologist. I've literally never heard that before. I've never thought about it. And we were talking about the cicada bloom, I like to call it, as I think there's a super bloom in California of all these flowers, and Californians there are getting pissed because everyone's just driving there and walking on the super blooms and taking stupid Instagram selfies.
Oh, geez.
To be part of the super bloom, you know, the flowering, this giant field of flowers. And we'll talk about this in a minute. It's kind of related, no Mo May, but this bloom, this super bloom of cicadas, every 17 and every 13 years, these bugs come out of the ground, and they just happened to collide this year for the first time in 221 years, these cicadas. But the oddity, well, just the coincidence that they come out this year together, but just in general, like, how do these things know? It's never 16 years. It's never 18 years. They're like, 17 years, Francis, yeah. We got to get upstairs and get into these trees to eat the sap. Or I don't even know how it works, actually.
Well, it's not a well-understood system, to be honest with you.
Okay.
We do see a few come out a year early, very, very small number. We see a few come out a year later, but those are like little outliers, which doesn't surprise me at all because in nature we always have this distribution curve of the three standard deviations away from the mean, but the vast, vast majority come out on 13 and 17.
And it's always 17, or it's not like next year, do we have a new batch of 17-year guys?
So there are regional broods. So we're talking about brood 19 and brood 13. There's also a brood 1 and a brood 2 and a brood 3.
Okay.
And so I haven't memorized the map, but there's probably some 17-year cicadas coming out next year or the year after in a different part of the country.
But it's never together. It's never these guys come out this time and those guys come out.
That's right. They're all split up.
It's baffling. Is there anything just is as weird as that? Like 17 years they live in
the underground? It's pretty weird. It's pretty weird. I am not aware of any other species of insects that has that much diversity in length. There are some long-lived insects out there, like queen termites and some other insects. But this is one of the longest-lived insects that we have.
Okay, and I imagine they start out as some kind of like tiny worm or something, and.
Well, so what's going to happen this spring with the cicadas is that they'll mate up in the trees, and the females will actually lay their eggs in the stems of the tree. So they'll actually make a little slice and lay a bunch of eggs, hundreds of eggs each individual, that will then hatch fairly this year and then fall into the ground. And then they'll hatch underground, and they will go through several nymph stages, getting bigger and bigger over the next 13 or 17 years until they come out again.
And so they just, does anything eat them underground, like moles or anything like that?
Yeah, they would be susceptible to some ground-eating moles and maybe other insectivores, voles and things like that might be eating them. But they're hard to get to.
I was going to say, how far underground? Because they got to be below the frost line, and
oh yeah,
I don't know. Are they hundreds of feet underground?
No. They're going to be within a few feet underground. Yeah.
Okay.
I have never come across them though. About digging the woods very often, and that's the other thing too is that they're very dependent upon the trees that they fall on. So they do not move far underground, and so if you go and clear cut a bunch of trees that have cicadas, 17-year cicadas, you're going to kill all the cicadas. And there are some areas, especially down, I think it was Louisiana, where they think they may have actually wiped out a good chunk of their cicada population down there, the 13 and 17-year cicadas, because they've deforested temporarily and then replanted, but now the cicadas are all were removed.
That's interesting, because I just wrote this down. One of the last times I had you on, we talked about this idea in Florida. They were going to GMO mosquitoes, genetically modify them. And I don't remember exactly what were they going to, do something to the males that they were impotent, or do you remember exactly?
Yeah. So what they were doing with that was trying to control various viruses that can be spread by mosquitoes, parasites. And so the idea was that we would prevent the mosquitoes from getting the virus, and by releasing sterile males, we would reduce the number of mosquito populations in the area long enough so that then whatever disease was being spread would be eliminated.
Yeah, they were going to – it's hard, though, to do – you have to collect all the male mosquitoes and give them all little mini vasectomies, right?
Yeah, basically, chemically, yeah.
but
GMO,
but
actually,
that would wipe out the mosquito population in the long run, right?
Well,
that was kind of the
– Yeah, the goal was not to remove all the mosquitoes permanently, to make them go extinct. It was to reduce the population of mosquitoes to manageable levels so that they were not transmitting any diseases themselves.
And I didn't look it up. I don't know if they did this already or if it – did you? Do you know it?
Yeah, well, yeah, they did a study in Florida and as well as Texas, and it was very, very controversial at the time. They did do some preliminary stuff, but then also the viruses they were looking at got a little bit better, and so there has not been as much interest in it most recently.
Okay, so it was a kind of a good thing to do?
Yeah.
Because when we talked, we were like, what if you eliminated a section of insect, and that would devastate the habitat in the area, right?
If
you got rid of the mosquitoes in Florida. But you were kind of talking to me about then not so many things eat that.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's a tough call, because if it's what do you do? The other are frogs going to be harmed? Are bats and swifts and swallows that are reliant on mosquito populations and other insects? What are you going to do to them? And so it's a sticky situation that humans are very willing to try and manipulate the environment to benefit us, with maybe causing some unnecessary changes that we didn't predict.
Yeah. Okay. So back to cicadas.
Sure.
You talk about Louisiana, they clear cut some trees and therefore the cicadas didn't come back because they need the trees.
Yeah.
If we just did that, does it matter? Because cicadas, they come out every 17 years. Nothing depends on them. If we didn't have cicadas, would it matter? Or do they do something to the ground or to the trees that nature needs?
Great question. So there's different types of value. So we have there's just an intrinsic value to having different types of insects or organisms or animals present on our planet. We may not understand anything specific that benefits us directly, right? So can we eat it? Does it make us a product that we can sell or whatever? And that's certainly not the case with the 17-year cicada. There is no market value for them for us, but there is a value for them to being in the environment. And that is what a lot of entomologists and many folks want to protect and conserve our environment, even though there may not be something that we know specifically is valuable. There could be something in the future that maybe we didn't understand at the time, and if we lose that, then we've lost that potential resource. Just from the, I'm going to call them beautiful, the beautiful cicadas coming out.
Going back to the text line, I know Joe's got a text about ticks, and we'll get to it in a minute, but Josh said, just because it's kind of part of the conversation, Josh Texan, I think the most important question of many people in the La Crosse area around the river is, what is the real solution to getting rid of mosquitoes? And he said, I'm not saying deer or citronella on your body or planting lemongrass or any of that stuff that doesn't work.
Yeah.
Obviously, if you live by water, there's going to be a lot of mosquitoes. Can we do anything about that?
Yeah, one of the best things you can do for mosquito control is to limit stagnant water.
Right.
So if you have, which is really hard because we have backwater in the area, but mosquitoes can even come up in overly watered lawns. And so if you have a lawn that has lots and lots of moisture in it, that lawn only needs to be wet for just a week and a half or two, and you can grow mosquitoes right out of your backyard.
Do mosquitoes, if you put a pin on a map to a place that's got water, like that, like right. you're talking, even right. if it's your backyard, you got a bucket of water.
Right.
Can you draw a circle around that, and the mosquito is only going to go like 500 feet around that? Or because when you talk about the Mississippi River and the backwaters,
yeah.
will they sprout there, so to speak, sprout? I don't know. Emerge there or whatever, yep. hatch. And then can they get to, say, the bluffs? You know, can they get to your houses? How far can mosquitoes travel?
Yeah, they do not travel that far. I don't know the numbers right off the top of my head, but they're
You're an entomologist. How do you not know this? Well, mosquitoes, you should know all mosquitoes.
I know. Well, it turns out in Wisconsin, we have dozens and dozens of different species of mosquitoes.
Okay.
And only a handful actually will bite humans. But we have done studies in terms of like how far they. This is no knowledge, but I know it's not miles.
Mm-hmm.
And so, if you're gonna have a mosquito come out, it's probably pretty local. So if you're getting bit by mosquitoes, I like to play disc golf. I like to go down to Pettibone, mm-hmm. and sometimes you just can't play down there. And that makes sense because it offers a lot of rain. There's a lot of puddles. We got the backwater right there.
Yeah.
But if you go up to Roe Park and play up there, you know, there's not a lot of stagnant water and there's no mosquitoes around there. So in general, if you control stagnant water around your local area, you're probably going to have less mosquitoes. Additionally, if you have fish or other nice healthy water environment, they're going to eat the mosquito larvae that are in the water.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't get too concerned about a lot of the backwater.
Can you combat this with bats, bat houses?
Oh, yeah.
Would that help? Build a bat house in your backyard, maybe?
Build a bat house. Have swifts and swallows. They love to eat mosquitoes and other insects. So there's certainly lots of things that will eat.
How do you lure swifts and swallows to live by you?
Well, they
can't feed them because you want them to eat.
Yeah. Well, actually, the chimney swifts are migrating now, and there is an organization that is looking for volunteers to actually count chimney swifts in the area. So I should have brought a link, but they are looking for volunteers to promote a chimney swift habitat, which involves they'll live on your house and your roof, not in your house, but on your eaves or outside of those areas, and they're a good insect eater.
So I think Josh is thinking like, how do we eradicate mosquitoes?
Yeah.
But A, we're probably it's impossible. B, you can't really because it's part of the environment. And C, just, you know, build some bat houses.
Build some. There are other ways, but man, they are pesky. And you know, that's if they are in your property or they are in your house, I don't blame any. Or they're biting you. Have at them, kill them, get rid of them.
I was just part of news here when the city of La Crosse stopped spraying for mosquitoes.
Oh, yeah.
Is that a thing that works, or is that kind of a gimmicky and bad for the? You know, environment.
It's a balance thing. There's a cost to it. There's a timing to it. You're putting a toxin out in the environment. How is it affecting people? You know, and so there's lots of variables on that one. So mm-hmm. certainly applying toxins to the water will kill mosquitoes. But is it also then affecting other organisms? Maybe that's going to negatively affect fishing because now the small fry don't have all of the species of insects available to them. And so we certainly don't want to affect those things.
All right. When we come back, talk about ticks a little bit and no mo may with Dr. Ted Wilson, entomologist at Viterbo. All right. Welcome back to La Crosse Talk PM. I'm Rick Solom. In the studio with me is Dr. Ted Wilson, entomologist at Viterbo University. He's also the biology chair there. He's been doing that for a decade. We spent quite a bit of the show talking about the cicada emergence. It's going to happen. When is that going to happen? Because if they know every 17 years we come up and every 13, do we know exactly when they're going to start popping?
So it's going to be related to soil temperature. So once the soil temperature gets up to warm enough, that's when they're going to start emerging. So you're probably going to start seeing them emerging in maybe further southern part of Illinois. And then as things warm up, you're going to start seeing them up here too.
Move up. It's not going to happen. The two broods aren't going to emerge here at the same time. You'd have to go south.
Yep.
But for those people that will experience this, and maybe you, I mean, do you know or do you not know, is it going to be super annoying?
I think so. I have witnessed a 17-year cicada emergence when I was going to graduate school down in Iowa State, and we traveled, and it was really loud.
Okay.
So it was quite impressive.
And that was just one.
That was just one,
so we have 17 and 13,
yeah.
40,000. Is there a world here where there's not enough resources when two of these collide and...
Well, they're not doing much resource consuming when they're doing this. They're coming out and they're primarily going to be mating,
smashing.
Okay, yeah,
we call it smashing.
Smashing.
And then can they when you talk about the eggs on the leaves and stuff?
Sure, yeah.
Is there enough leaves? Or well, can the eggs be on the same leaves?
They're gonna lay a lot of eggs on those trees. Yeah, and there's gonna be studies done. They're gonna figure out more details about that. Are the trees gonna be more stressed out because having two broods, perhaps in some areas, is that gonna cause damage to those trees? So I think there's gonna be some really interesting results coming from this very rare event.
All right. Another thing, ticks. Do we have to worry specifically about anything new with ticks, or is it just kind of the same old avoid ticks, they're bad?
Yeah. The new thing every year is, when are they coming out, how often they're going to be there. We don't have any new species of ticks. There's no new parasites, that are new diseases associated with them. Of course, everybody's familiar with the Lyme disease and the black-legged tick. As I mentioned maybe before, we've had a pretty warm spring here, and so ticks are out in good numbers already, which is a few, they've been out for a few weeks already. I have several colleagues that have found ticks on their dogs. One had a tick on his wife. So if you're out and about, you do want to take your standard procedures of perhaps putting some DEET on or some other alternative and wearing those the protective clothes.
Can I flush a tick down the toilet just willy-nilly?
Sure. Yeah.
Will that kill it? It's going to go into my septic tank. Is it going to survive, or should I just be burning them all in my fireplace?
Yeah, from my professional experience, just flush that tank.
They'll drown?
Or you can just smash them.
I just feel like they're indestructible, and they won't drown. They'll get into my septic, and they'll figure out a way to get back out, and then they'll be even worse.
Well, you give them a chance. Crap. Maybe there's a crack in your septic.
Right,
yeah. Crawl right out.
What else? Oh, because we had, and this is every year, so we have a warm, really warm, like it was super warm in February, right?
Yeah.
And then it was super cold, and then it snowed, and then it melted, and then it's, like, we do that. Does that really mess up the insect population?
Oh, yeah, actually it can. Some of the hardest years on insects are where we have really cold winters with almost no snow. So that means we get really deep freeze into the soil. And so a lot of insects do live under the soil over the winter. But if you think of that snow, if you have like 3-4 feet of snow, it actually acts as an insulation.
But we had the opposite this year. We didn't even have a cold winter.
Yeah. So it's a better year for insects.
Insects are going to be bad.
If that's what you're looking
what
at.
What about
yeah.
like when it comes to like, it's warm out, and then it snows. So all the insects come out and then it snows and kills them all. Does that really mess up everything?
They can usually deal with that pretty well. Okay. There are some early season insects that might be affected by that, but most insect species really aren't coming out until May and June. So,
all right. Yeah. Last thing, the city's doing no mow May, the city of La Crosse. Essentially, you just don't mow your lawn until the end of May or till the beginning of June. Every kid's dream, because if you grew up like me, I had 3 hours worth of lawn to mow every week. go mow the church lawn, go mow the other yards and neighbors. And how's this working out? Is this a good thing? Is there any negatives to no mow May?
Well, first of all, I'm not directly associated with no mow May, but I'm a really interested fan in it and take part in it because what the idea behind it is to promote flowering of plants to promote native insects. And so if you let your lawn grow a bit more in the May season, you're going to promote flowering of various things, and that's going to help out pollinators like bees and wasps and butterflies that are trying to find that early season snack to get them through into the summer part of the year. So if you let your lawn go a little bit, or maybe you mow every other week, or maybe you don't put out insecticides in May, which are all options actually with the No Mow May project. Mm-hmm. You don't have to not mow your lawn. You could take a different type of a pledge and to take part in this. So the negatives of it, there's it's people's property. They have the right to do with what they want with that. They may not like their neighbor with a taller lawn. I think though after the period, you do need to start going back to the city's regulations with mowing your lawn to a certain height though. So this is only a early season project.
Yeah, because the weeds are, we call them, comes around and says your grass is too long.
The weeds.
And they ticket. They give you a ticket. I don't know exactly
how. You've got a lot of those?
I'm kind of, yeah, they wear, a funky hat with weeds on it. And I don't really see a whole lot of negatives, but some people be like, oh, there's going to be so many mosquitoes and bugs. And it's kind of the point.
Well, yeah, that is kind of the point. You don't have to do your whole yard. You can do part of it. And if you don't want to do it, I think that's also great as well. But there are other alternatives, and I think that part of this project is to give people different options of lawn care management. Perhaps even maybe planting a portion of it to some native flowers. You know, some pollen. Put a pollinator garden in there. You can get some nice deep prairie types of plants that maybe have a nice association with other insects. And so one of the biggest problems with biodiversity is land usage. And so, and if you just have a one monocrop yard with just tall fescue or Kentucky bluegrass, there isn't a lot for other species to take advantage of that. So yeah, it's we're kind of talking on both sides of our mouth there, because we're also, hey, we're going to have a bunch of insects with cicadas and all those types of things, and ticks are a problem. But also we want other insects too. And the native pollinators are a big one.
Let's just be real. No mow May is just about letting your dandelions grow in a little bit so that, like, the bees and what else can use it. Because dandelions are kind of the thing that we think dandelions are bad, but dandelions aren't all that bad, right?
Well, it's all about perspective, right? So they're great flower for pollinators. You know, they're also, some people like to eat them. I remember as a kid eating the dandelion leaves, making a salad out of it, and those types of things. There's also Creepin' Charlie, has a great little purple flower, but of course it's also Creepin' Charlie and can take over your yard.
Yeah,
too.
we've been, you know, I guess we've been duped to think these things are bad, and they're not. Like, we should just have Creepin' Charlie lawns instead of grass, right?
I actually have a lot of Creepin' Charlie in my lawn, and I'm okay with it.
All right, that's Dr. Ted Wilson. He's an entomologist at Viterbo. He's a biology chair there. And also, there's a tick app. You got like 10 seconds here.
Oh, yeah. There's actually an app called the Tick App. It has an orange icon on your Play Store or App Store. I've been using it this spring, and it's really good with a lot of good information about ticks, how to identify them, how to report tick bites, how to maybe remove ticks on your pets or on yourself, and even how to maybe control tick populations in your yard.
All right, so is it going to tell me, oh man, I found this tick? And
yeah, actually, you could take pictures of them and submit them. There's people that will look at the pictures and identify them for you.
Yeah, because there's some ticks, if you find them on your dog, this is just me being like personal.
Yep.
Oh crap, I got this one. But yeah. Different ones, like, oh, I've never seen this one before, that could be really bad.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, there's kind of the big three, the Lone Star, the wood tick, and the black-legged tick.
All right, thanks, Ted.